We're looking this morning at Hebrews chapter 11, verses 13 through 16. Just a short paragraph, which is a summary statement embedded in the middle, well, almost the middle of Hebrews chapter 11 anyway. It is a summary statement which talks about faith. Several statements about faith have been given to us in the previous verses. More importantly, individuals have been named in the previous verses who were individuals of faith, several men and a woman, Sarah by name. And we now get this little summary, which comes in verses 13 through 16. And it seems to me, as we get this summary of the topic of faith, that we are dealing with a particular thesis, and I have that written in the outline, which I put in the bulletin, and if you want to follow along or use that little outline, I'd encourage you to do that. The thesis is this, that the posture of faith assumed by the Old Testament saints was evidence that they were heirs of heaven. That's what this little summary of faith brings before us. And it really goes back to Hebrews chapter 10. And I've told you this before, that Hebrews 11 really is an exposition of the faith which is spoken of in Hebrews chapter 10, verse 32, for example. But remember the former days when, after being enlightened, you endured a great conflict of suffering. We're talking about faith which endures. Verse 36 in Hebrews chapter 10 says, "For you have need of endurance, so that when you have done the will of God, you may receive what was promised." And verse 39 in chapter 10 says, "But we are not of those who shrink back to destruction, but of those who have faith to the preserving of the soul." That is, they endure to the end. And we're also dealing with this description of faith that is given in Hebrews chapter 11, verse 1. "Now faith is the assurance of things hoped for and the conviction of things not seen." You see, we have all of these things before us as we come to Hebrews chapter 11 and verses 13 through 16. And the writer to the Hebrews now, in the text which is before us, having rehearsed the lives of these heroes of faith, now speaks of the posture of their faith in death. Look at verse 13. "All these died in faith, without receiving the promises, but having seen them and having welcomed them from a distance, and having confessed that they were strangers and exiles on the earth." Here is the posture of the saints of the Old Testament as they faced death. All died, the writer to the Hebrews says. I think we have to take this as a general statement, because in the earlier verses, the writer to the Hebrews has also spoken about Enoch, who was translated into heaven and he didn't see death. This is a general statement. And there's not a one of us in this room who will not see death, except Christ come again before that time. That would be the exception to the general rule. All these died, the writer to the Hebrews tells us. And friends, although it's an awesome thing, it is appointed, the writer to the Hebrews says earlier in chapter 9 and verse 27, it is appointed for men to die once, and after this comes judgment. That we are all faced with. And we must be willing, hear this, we must be willing to pass through the veil of death without fear. That's the wonder of the faith that is given to us in Jesus Christ. All these died in faith. And part of the wonder of the faith that we have in Jesus Christ is that we can face death without fear. Put your finger there in Hebrews 11 and just turn back in the book of Hebrews to chapter 2 and verse 14 and then verse 15. Here we see a little bit about Jesus Christ. Hebrews 2:14, since then the children share in flesh and blood, he himself likewise also partook of the same, that through death he might render powerless him who had the power of death, that is the devil, and might deliver those who through fear of death were subject to slavery all of their lives. One of the reasons Jesus Christ came into the world was to deliver people like us from the fear of death. And there are individuals in this world today who are slaves to that fear of death. And they will do anything to avoid the inevitable. They think they can avoid it. They will work to avoid it. We as the people of God must be willing to face death without fear, because the faith that we have in Jesus Christ literally reaches through the veil of death into glory itself. Look again now at Hebrews chapter 11, verse 13. All these died in faith without receiving the promises. Here was their faith. And yet, these saints, which the writer to the Hebrews has spoken of already, are individuals who did not receive the promises. What in the world? There is Abraham, who was promised that his children would be as numerous as the sands of the seashore. And he saw one child of that promise, Isaac. One son. And he saw some grandsons. He didn't see all those people. He didn't receive that. Here was Abraham also, that was promised a land. Do you realize how much of that land Abraham actually owned? A burial plot. That's how much he owned. He didn't receive the land. In his son and in that burial plot, he had a down payment on the promises. And that's exactly how we are today as believers in Jesus Christ. We haven't received heaven. We haven't received the glory which is to come. We haven't received the promises that are to come in the wonders of the new earth and the new heaven which is promised. But what do we have? We have a down payment on glory which is to come. We have the Holy Spirit who has been given to us as a down payment. All these died in faith without receiving the promises, but having seen them and having welcomed them from a distance and having confessed that they were strangers and exiles on the earth. They didn't receive the promises, but they saw the promises at a distance. You know, as I pondered this myself, I had to think, you know, for me, I don't know how it is for you, but it seems like heaven is a long way away. A long way off, because we can't grasp it. It's not something tangible that's right. We can't travel to it. We can't get in the automobile and go there. It's a long way off. And we see the promise at a distance. And that's how Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and Noah and all those Old Testament saints were. And yet they welcomed the promise, the writer to the Hebrews says. They welcomed it. They were glad. Aren't you glad for the prospect of heaven? Doesn't the prospect of heaven make you glad? It should. They welcomed that promise. And at the same time, the writer to the Hebrews says they made a confession, these people. Verse 13 again. And having confessed that they were strangers and exiles on the earth. They said to the people around them, you know, this land of our wanderings is not our home. Our home is somewhere else. And we're strangers on this earth. I don't know about you, but there are times when I really feel that way. That this isn't my home. Oh yeah, we live in Sterling, Kansas, USA, and you live here or in some other community. And you have a home here. But it's temporary. And we're traveling through this life in preparation for a much better place. And those Old Testament saints were confessing that. That's what the writer to the Hebrews tells us. Now let's move on to verse 14. Why did they have this posture? For those who say such things make it clear that they are seeking a country of their own. Something was being made clear in the lives of these people. It's really interesting. These people were making a confession. They were glad for the promises of heaven. And they said that they were strangers and exiles on the earth. And they made a show of their faith. That's what verse 14 is telling us. They made things clear in their lives, the way they lived. Things were clear from the character of their lives. And when I say they made a show of their faith, I'm not saying that this was a show, a display in a negative kind of way. Sometimes when we use that term, we think right away of a negative slant, and that's not the point at all. Their faith was open and public. It wasn't a private matter. We have this false impression in the Church of Jesus Christ today that my faith is a private matter. It's between God and myself. It's not a public thing. That nobody else in the world need know about it. Not so. Not so. Our faith ought to be a public thing. That we stand for Jesus Christ, that we live for Jesus Christ, ought to be known by others. And that was the point in the lives of these Old Testament saints. They made something very clear, it says. For those who say such things, who make such a confession, make it clear that they are seeking a country, not seeking a country of their own. Some of you think I'm on this hobby horse of seeking. And here it is. What were these people doing as they lived on the earth? Having received promises from God, but they were still afar off. How did they live? As individuals in the process of seeking something. They were looking for something. Their lives were pointed in the direction of something else, and they were seeking. It's interesting that Abraham, for example, before he was converted, it says in verse 8, by faith Abraham, when he was called, obeyed by going out to a place which he was to receive for an inheritance, and he went out not knowing where he was going. To the extent to the extent that God spoke to him about going out from Ur of the Chaldees, he believed God, but he wasn't a justified person yet. You remember we studied that. It wasn't until Abraham got into the promised land and heard the promise of God and believed that promise of God and it was reckoned to him as righteousness that he had right standing with God. And before that, what did he do? He was seeking. And it's interesting. At conversion, verses 9 and 10, by faith he lived as an alien in the land of promise, as in a foreign land, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, fellow heirs of the same promise, for he was looking for the city which has foundations, whose architect and builder is God. What was the orientation of his life? He was seeking that celestial city. That's what he was seeking. And at death, again, verses 13 and 14, all these died in faith without receiving the promises, but having seen them and having welcomed them from a distance and having confessed that they were strangers and exiles on the earth. For those who say such things make it clear that they are seeking a country of their own. That was the orientation of their lives. I wonder if that's the orientation of your life this morning. I have to ask the same question about myself, because we all get caught up in the material things of this life. And we get caught up in sufficient measure that we forget the ultimate direction we are going. Seeking that country of our own, which is heaven itself. Well, we go on to the next verses and we see this posture of faith defined for us a little bit further. Verse 15, and indeed, if they had been thinking of that country from which they went out, they would have had opportunity to return. But as it is, they desire a better country, that is, a heavenly one. I think we have to get the idea here. And if indeed they had been thinking of that country from which they went out. The King James Version said if they had been mindful of that country, if they spent time thinking about that country. Do you suppose that Abraham thought a lot about the Ur of the Chaldees, that country from which he had come when he was in the promised land? Do you suppose he spent all of his time thinking about how it might have been back there? Do you suppose that was the orientation of his life? No, not at all. Again, I had to think about myself here, and it is kind of interesting. Not all of you have been converted later in life. I was converted to faith in Christ after I graduated from college, and I think about that time once in a while, and I think about that former life once in a while. I have absolutely no desire to go back there. Absolutely no desire. I remember it, but I don't spend time dwelling on that. Why? Because this life now with Jesus Christ is so much better. It's so much better. Why would I even think about going back there? That's what the writer to the Hebrews is saying. Verse 15 again, and indeed if they had been thinking of that country from which they went out, they would have had opportunity to return. Abraham had plenty of time. He could have gone back to Ur of the Chaldees. From the time in which he left, when he was 75 years old, to the time in which Isaac was born, when he was 100 years old, that's 25 years, isn't it? Do you suppose that was sufficient time for Abraham, if he had a mind to go back to Ur of the Chaldees? No. Yeah, it was time. There was time there, but he was not interested in that. Think about Noah. How long did Noah spend building the ark? 120 years. Was there time for him to stop? Whoa, there was time. He could have quit that job. Under the persecution that he suffered, he could have quit that job many times. And I suppose others would have quit it much, much sooner than he even contemplated it. Because that wasn't in his thinking. You remember the children of Israel? After they came out of Egypt? It was a different story with them, wasn't it? Oh, can't we go back to Egypt, they said. Can't we go back? We'd like to go back. Moses, you've led us out here in the wilderness. We want to go back. It was a different posture that they had than these other Old Testament saints. And so, that's part of what we're faced with. And indeed, if they had been thinking of that country from which they went out, they would have had opportunity to return. But as it is, they desired a better country, that is, a heavenly one. Those folks were not thinking of the past. They were not even dwelling on the present so much. Their eyes were fixed on the future. You know what happens in the church so often? As the church grows and declines and grows and declines, that individuals within the church often will look back and say, you know, I wish it was like it was 20 or 30 years ago. You know, the people that we had and the wonderful times that we had. It'd sure be nice if it were like that. And we live in the past. We're never going to have the past again. And it's never going to be like that again. And in fact, the writer to the Hebrews says that the past and the present are dwarfed by the glory of the future. That's what the writer to the Hebrews is telling us. And we have to have that kind of perspective. We have to be a people who are looking ahead at the promises of God. I feel that way about this congregation. I really do. I believe we need to be looking ahead and not dwelling on the past and not dwelling so much on the future, but looking ahead to what God is going to do in the midst of His people here. Because Jesus Christ promised that He's going to build His church, and this is a viable representation of the church of Jesus Christ, and Christ is in the midst of building His church. And this congregation is going to go forward. We need to look ahead at what God will do. That needs to be our perspective. But as it is, they desire a better country, that is, a heavenly one. Ah, get that perspective, folks. And here's the wonderful thing, then, in our fourth point. That's God's perspective on all of this. Look at what God says. Verse 16, therefore God is not ashamed to be called their God, for He has prepared a city for them. Here were these Old Testament saints, Abel and Enoch and Noah and Abraham and Sarah and Isaac and Jacob. And lo and behold, these individuals who had the faith that we've been talking about are identified in the Bible in a peculiar way. In fact, it's not even they that are identified in a peculiar way. It is God who is identified in a peculiar way, because God is denoted by the names of these saints. God is the God of Abraham. God is the God of Isaac. God is the God of Jacob. What an astounding thing this is. And God is identified by these faithful saints. That is powerful, I think. Because people like you and me, who trust in Jesus Christ and make it clear that we walk in this world in that same posture of faith in Jesus Christ, people around us could be saying, and could be talking about, the God of Eldo, and the God of Quentin, and the God of Linda, and the God of Dave. Is that to bring God down? No. That's not to bring God down. God is pleased to be called their God. God is pleased to be called your God. Wow. I don't know how that strikes you, but it strikes me as that could be just a little bit of encouragement. More than a little bit. And the writer to the Hebrews goes on and says that God is pleased to be called their God in verse 16. For He has prepared a city for them. I want you to keep your finger there in Hebrews 11 and turn back to Matthew 25 to a verse. In Matthew 25. Matthew 25, verse 34. Here is the scene at the time of judgment. Verse 34. Then the king will say to those on his right hand, "Come, you who are blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world." There is a kingdom prepared for people from the foundation of the world. And how is it that individuals make known the fact that they are heirs of heaven, that they are individuals who will receive that kingdom which has been promised from the foundation of the world? How is it that they make known that that's the case? How is it that it is known that that's the case? By the posture of faith that they take in this life. What was that posture of faith? That they look forward to glory which was to come. And when they lived in that posture of faith, this was an evidence of the fact that glory was in fact theirs. That God had prepared a city for them. Is that where you are this morning? Is it? Has God prepared a city for you? Then, my friend, the posture of faith that you should be walking in is that which we have discussed this morning. May your life so be.